Kelly Black is author of the award-winning young adult novel In the Dark Spaces, a science fiction thriller. The incredibly unique novel won the Ampersand Prize, was highly commended by the Victorian Premier's Literary Prize, shortlisted by the Children's Book Council of Australia, the Ditmars, and for the Ethel Turner Prize in the New South Wales Premier's Award. It has also made the 2018 Inky Awards long list. The novel has been described as a genre-smashing hostage drama. This groundbreaking thriller with a blindingly original voice, raw, strange, and deeply sympathetic. With its vivid and immersive world-building, this electrifying debut is The Knife of Never Letting Go meets Homeland for the next generation of sci-fi readers. If you enjoy this podcast, please check out our back catalogue for incredible authors, including Jackie French, Kate Forsyth, Craig Johnson, author of Longmire series, James Fahey, Will Kostakis, Stephen Herrick, Lawrence O'Brien, Gabrielle Tozer, William Kent Kruger, and Rusty Young. I'm Danny V, your host.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I really enjoyed your novel. It was such an unusual setting, set in an alien landscape with such unique characters. How did this idea emerge for you?
The idea came to me. I was actually just fooling around with voice. I wasn't actually going to show this novel to anyone. So this novel was completely written for me. So I just went crazy with it, really. And I wanted to write a story about, you know, what would really happen if an alien species encountered humans, and they would probably be so much more advanced that we would be nothing mm-hmm. to them. It was basically a story about a girl who winds up being a translator initially, and what it would take to survive in a really hostile environment. And that's what I set out to write, and it just flowed from there and went in different directions, and that's what we ended up with.
So intriguing, because when I picked it up, I hadn't read anything about it, and there was nothing really to hint. I mean, I see it now on the cover after I've read it, but on the back it says, "What will happen to your family when you don't come back? An electrifying kidnap drama like no other." From a brilliant new voice in Australian YA. But it's nothing, it doesn't really give you a hint until you get into it, and you're like, wow, this is very unique. So I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, I think the publishers were thinking that because it's an intensive viewpoint, it would appeal to a lot of people who don't normally read science fiction, mm-hmm. A lot of young adults. So they didn't want to rule out the fantasy readers and the contemporary readers by being all out science fiction-y, I think, in the blurb.
Now, the Garua, our alien species, are one of the most unusual characters I've ever encountered. Not quite alien, not quite bird, definitely not human, and not what we usually expect from alien characters. How did you come up with them? You said you were playing with the other characters. Is this something emerged from a dream or a nightmare or something you'd seen before or just completely your imagination?
I was trying to think, you know, what kind of physiology an alien would have if they spent their whole lives in space. So I made them tall and willowy because they don't need a lot of muscles if they're living at low G. And I gave them gliding wings to get from place to place because you would do a lot of gliding if you weren't weighed down substantially. And that kind of just led to a bird-like figure. And I thought, well, why not?
I like that idea that it started off really practical. I found their hive, the place they lived, that was almost a symbol for Earth because it was this living place, but they really took care of it. Was this something, again, you researched or thought that it could be a symbol of an Earth or a different kind of living place where people are on? Or was this, again, just something you came up with as the story developed?
Yeah, I wanted to make something where it was sentient and you had to give to it in order to live, belong with it. So I created this hive where they lived, which protected them from space, but only so long as they fed it and cared for it, kind of thing. So then it's kind of like Earth, but of course Earth doesn't get upset and check us off if we don't look after it.
Well, it kind of does, but not the way the hive did. It might eventually.
Not in such a sentient way.
Yeah, that's right. And with the aliens, I found that even it subverted my expectations of gender because it was assumed they were male, but they were female. And I liked how she said being a mother made her somehow more dangerous. Protecting is something you got to see through. So I like that idea of the subversion of gender. They weren't, you know, they were quite vicious, they were quite violent, but they were female. And that was a different angle than what I'd expected.
Yeah, I really like the idea of spacefarers being female, and generally female species of anything eat less, they can reproduce, they have less muscle mass normally, and what do you need muscle for in space if you're floating around? So I really wanted my alien species to be all female and to have evolved to a point where they've done away with males.
And I always find complex villains to be the most interesting. And these alien species, they did that. Not at first. At first, you know, they're quite some horrific acts and it was quite violent. But as we delve into the story, we hear their perspective and how they're just trying to protect their families. And once you see the villains or the opposing forces' perspective, you have a much greater understanding or empathy for those who aren't human. Did you have a real interest in showing the other side and the other perspective of the so-called villains in the story?
Yes, I think it's always like that when you see two factions at war. If you understand where they're both coming from, you can see the differences. And what I wanted to create was two species who just couldn't find a parallel ground, and to see the other side of it. And so then the translator would be useful in trying to explain it to those who had never encountered this kind of being before, I think.
And beyond the strange setting and the alien characters, because we've talked a bit about that already, but there's a very human element to the story. It's about family and what you're willing to do for those who you love. And how important was it for you to have this human story alongside this alien setting and these alien characters?
I think that's what held the story together, because initially we didn't have a Gub when it won the Ampersand Prize. There was no young cousin to look after, and it was very cold and harsh, and Marissa said it was relentlessly dark and draining or something. So we added Gub, and it kind of all fell together, and he was the light in this terrible thing. He was, you know, keeping him safe and getting back to him kind of drove the story along and kept Tamara going. So it was very, very important to have this light and love in there. And it all makes sense, because really the poor people on the ships have nothing but family. And, of course, they're not allowed to bring their families if they're working in the inner levels. It really held the story together and gave it that light and love that it needed to help the reader brave the darkness.
But it also gave parallels, because she was looking after her family and trying to do that, and that's what they were doing too. So I guess that's where that sort of common understanding came. And I love hearing about original manuscripts and how it didn't have these pieces that end up being really core parts of the novel.
Yes, there was a lot of work to move it from what it was when it was accepted for the Ampersand to the final product. A lot of work.
And it also talks about, like, the moral compass of people, because the moral compass obviously isn't always constant, and she was involved or participated in some quite horrible and violent acts, but it was all because she had to go and save Gub. And I think without that, we wouldn't have been so forgiving, I guess, of the things that she had participated in, because she had this reason to protect and to go back and do what she had to do to get back to this poor baby.
Yes, yeah, she had that motive, and at times she felt like giving up and dying, and without Gub to go back for, and that was her reason to live, because he needed her. It felt rather trite that she was, you know, just doing these horrible, taking lives to survive. Mm. When without that Gub element that she had to keep surviving to get back to him and she was being forced to do these things she didn't want to do. So
yeah, absolutely, because yeah. I think if it was just for yourself, it would be perceived as being quite selfish. But if, when it's for yes. someone else, especially such a defenseless baby, you know, you think, no, you have to get back. The whole story is like, oh, no, you have to get back to Gump. What's happening to Gump?
yes, don't hurt the baby was my motto.
I also think it's really interesting that we talk about these alien species who, you know, can be quite violent at, you know, at first glance. But then I think there's also a statement about humanity and how we've often lost our humanity because of our greed or need for money or the fact that we don't act like a community, because the hive runs very much like a community, everyone taking care of each other. And the alien species doesn't understand the capitalist society and keeps saying, I don't understand. What is this thing you talk of that's money or nunny, I think they call it.
Yeah,
and I think
they don't have lips. They can't get their M's out.
Well, that explains it. And I thought, you know, that really is a statement about humanity and where we're at and what we see is important, you know, that grabbing the money and the capitalist society rather than taking care of our community.
Yeah, well, money comes and money goes and you can lose it all so easily, I think. It's very easy to lose your job, lose your home, lose everything that you've worked for years in this current society. So the things that really matter are the things we should be holding on to, which is community and family, and those are the things that get you through, I think, in the end. So, yeah, I just wanted, you know, just to say where are your values.
And I thought it was so interesting that they came from an alien species. And I thought, you know what? If an alien species did come down to Earth, there would be a lot of confusion. Like, why on Earth are you doing this? Why does your society run in this way? So, yeah, it did. It raised some questions about where your values are at too. But in some ways, you're kind of stuck. You know, no matter what your values are, we do live in that kind of society.
Yeah, there's a trend lately too for the working poor. So people who have jobs who can only afford to drive a car and buy clothes to go back to that job. And they're really trapped because they can never get any extra money to move out of rent or do anything else. So it's the aliens have seen this and they're kind of calling it a kind of slavery, slave to the money.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Brought up some very interesting questions. And I like books that bring up actually more questions because you're not meant to have all the answers, but bringing up more questions.
I have no answers.
Well, that's a shame. That was my next question. How do we solve the, you know, humanity's problems?
Well, that's a big one.
Yeah, no, it wasn't really a question. I was checking. And I think that's what was really interesting. Like we talked about the cover before, that it didn't really lend itself to what the book was about, but I thought it didn't need to because it had all those human elements. And, you know, it was a kidnap story. It was a hostage story, just something with a real twist. And I was really pleasantly surprised. I mean, you know, I read a lot and it's not often you're too surprised by a story, but I was pleased that this was a really surprising story. Has that been common feedback for you from readers?
Yeah, most of the readers are surprised to find themselves reading a science fiction novel, but science fiction is amazing in the way it can explore our society and where we're going without actually, you know, slamming it in your face and turning it into a nice story. But, yeah, there has been a lot of surprise where people have picked up the novel and discovered it's got large aliens in it.
Bird-like aliens with no lips. Yes. I thought it was really interesting as well because if people say, what genre do you like? I've never said sci-fi until, you know, I have recently, but then I started looking at all the books that I've read and I think people's initial idea of sci-fi has changed a lot. I think the genre has become a lot broader now.
Yeah, there are a lot of different sub-genres to sci-fi. There's a lot of futuristic fiction. There's a lot of apocalyptic type fiction. And it is very, very popular, especially in the movies with the Hunger Games and all that stuff. That's all sci-fi. So, yeah, people do like sci-fi. They just, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the original thing was you think sci-fi, you think Star Trek, or you think, you know, that kind of thing. But it's so much broader than that. Like you say, you know, although Hunger Games is quite dystopian as well, it's also got that element to it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just I'm just outright a lover of science fiction.
Well, me too now. I just didn't actually know it until I thought about it. I went, wait, no, I am too. Now, Tamara, our protagonist, she starts off as a character who has to be hidden and who doesn't have a voice. And throughout her journey, she finds power and finds family in unexpected places. And she says towards the end, I am the Wiku that calls life from the darkness. I'm the only one who understands both sides. It's some journey for that character. How did you develop that character?
Well, I wanted to start her off as the weakest, weakest person in the galaxy, basically. So she's, you know, she's young. She's at that age where she's almost a woman, but she has no power. She's been hidden her whole life. She can't speak in full sentences because she's never spoken to people. And, in fact, she's had a failure at speaking to people when they tried to settle on a planet. So she feels voiceless and she feels weak and hidden and she's small for her age and she can't, you know, she can't work because she can't pass for being older. So, and she's, the only thing she's really good at is sneaking around the freighter and spying on people and trying to figure out, you know, how the freighter works and how to get around without being seen. So she has this skill of observation and sneakiness. These are her only skills. So I wanted to take her to a full journey where she understood that she was important and her voice was important and she could, you know, get up and speak and defend people with her voice.
She finds that too, doesn't she? I mean, she's quite perceptive in that, you know, when they go onto a ship, there are no survivors, but she has this way of just figuring out a way to survive, which I think, you know, is a quality she found in herself that she didn't know she had.
Right at the start, yeah. She speaks up when other people are shooting and she's surprised herself that she's actually, you know, screaming out in this foreign language that she has no idea what it means, but she would do anything to save Gub, so that's what she does.
And instinctively finds a way, which is the role of a mother, isn't it? Using instincts to protect. So it's interesting that she had these qualities that she didn't even know.
And they build and strengthen the whole way through.
As well, she had a really distinctive voice and dialogue. And how did you go and develop that? Because it was very distinctive when her voice was coming out. I hadn't read something quite like it before.
I wanted her to have a voice of no education and poverty, but also I felt that in the future on these freighters there would be kind of merging of cultures, so I've put a lot of Asian type slang in there. Of course there'd probably be much more, but I wanted English people to read it. So I held back a bit. But yeah, I just wanted a language of poverty and a language being uneducated, and, you know, people kind of build up their own language on depending on where they're from. So the people who live at the outer levels are normally the rich people, and they have a fairly cultured type of way of speaking. But at the internal levels, they're all a bit, you know, rough and slang and welcoming and friendly, I think.
Now, there are some parts of the book that are quite gory and violent, quite vivid imagery. Now, did you enjoy writing these scenes? I felt like you did as a reader.
I did, actually. I was just trying to be really, really honest. I thought there's no point, showing something graphic and not showing the horrors of war and death and everything that happens. I kind of just set out to be really honest and make the reader see how disgusting it is.
Now, the book has won a number of impressive awards, including the Ampersand Prize, which helped you get it published, as well as shortlisted for various awards. And you've said before that you really want your books to speak to readers and connect with them. How do you think In the Dark Spaces connects with readers?
Some readers absolutely get into the voice and really, really love it. Some sort of hang back a bit or lose it in places, but it's hard to say from this end. I get a lot of good feedback. A lot of adult readers have really, really, really got on board and really, really loved it. young people? I don't know. I get a lot of really, really good feedback, and then I'll get one or two who'll say, I didn't connect with the guru, or I didn't understand them. And
I don't think we can really connect with an alien species we've not met, right? I think it's just experiencing this alien side. But it's interesting too, you said adult readers have really latched onto it, and young adult fiction, it's no longer really young adult fiction now, is it? It's fiction for everybody, because I love it myself, and I know so many adults that really enjoy young adult fiction.
Oh, yeah, I think it's amazing, because it's always latching on to issues, and it's always searching for something better.
That's right.
And coming of age and finding out who you are in the world. And I think that's an adult problem as well as an adult focus as well as a young adult focus.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to change the name of the genre from young adult fiction just to, like, everyone fiction. Doesn't have quite the same ring.
Yeah, searching for your place in the world fiction.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We've touched on a little bit about your writing process and the first manuscript and what it included and what it didn't to the finished book that it is. What is your writing process? Are you driven by plot or character or an idea? And how does that go from there?
I normally start off with an idea and a character and sort of just jump in and start writing. And I develop the character voice as I go, and then I go back and adjust it to make sure it's all one voice. But basically I throw my character into something and write to enjoy them running around trying to figure it all out, which means I have to do a lot of rewriting. And a lot of changing, and I think In the Dark Spaces had about 3 or 4 different ends.
Wow, that's interesting.
Because we just couldn't get it right. It's incredible. It's an incredible amount of work. I think I have 160,000 words in the rubbish bin of this document.
Oh, I always think they're words that you needed to get the words that you needed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it was an exploratory thing, this one.
What was one of the endings that isn't one of the endings?
Oh, they had a big council meeting and everyone sat around talking. That didn't work.
Okay.
Especially because no one's going to listen to a 15-year-old
either. Well, so I liked the ending. I'm not going to give it away to people who haven't read it, but I thought it was very fitting and was something that the protagonist needed, so I liked it.
Yes, yes. And I even added at the last minute just another half chapter to the end too. So the early readers missed out on that extra half chapter.
They'll have to go back.
Last minute thing.
Now, what does it mean to win the Ampersand Award? Take us through the publishing process.
Well, it's very exciting. It's a prize for a first novel. And I've had educational fiction and short fiction published before, because I've been writing for about 17-something years without getting a novel published. So it was very exciting to finally have someone pick you up and say, yes, we're going to launch your career with an Ampersand Prize. They heaped praise upon me, which I was very suspicious about. And then we started working, and we started off by, you know, just broad sweeps talking and sending me away to do some rewrites and then coming back and narrowing it down. And then I think we went back and forth about 9 or 10 times until we finally got the ending that we liked. So it was a lot of work. Marissa and Luna at Hardy Grant Egmont put in a lot of reading time and thinking time to this, and but you know, we got to the point where they just say, we need this, and I go away and do that, and yeah, or expand on this, and I'll go and do that, and it I think we got to a good working point where it all worked out.
It's an incredible opportunity for new writers, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's really amazing, because you know, after plodding along for 17 years and not really getting a novel, I was got to the point where I was thinking, yeah, I think I know enough now to go out there and get a novel published. Because when you first start writing, you think you're good, but really you have nothing, no way to tell.
Yes, that's right. And having that guidance must have helped too, not having written a novel before.
Yeah, especially since the novel I handed in was basically a novel for me as an adult. Mm-hmm. And the young adult market is completely different. So there was a lot of work to do to give it that heart and love for that a young adult market was looking for. But yes, it was amazing. I got so much help from Marissa and Luna, so I was very, very happy.
Now, you're currently travelling Australia on a bus. Where are you, first of all?
I'm sitting on a hill in Stanthorpe.
That must be an incredible experience.
Yes, so I'm in a country Queensland. Wow. Just left country New South Wales, and I'm in country Queensland. Heading out to the coast today, so maybe Ballina or somewhere like that.
Oh, lovely. And is this going to provide inspiration for a new book, perhaps?
Well, it's going to provide writing time. The whole time I was writing In the Dark Spaces, I was actually working three jobs. The house burned down. I got another novel contract for a children's book under the name Bryn McDill. So I was working on that as well. And it kind of left me completely exhausted, the constant moving to emergency accommodation and then moving back home and then putting the house on the market to sell it off. It was a very hard slog, so it just kind of left me exhausted.
Because we kind of do get stuck with our mortgages and our houses and our jobs, but to have that freedom must be a whole other experience.
And Claire Coleman also wrote her book in a caravan.
Wonderful.
Travelling Australia. So maybe it's a thing all writers need to do.
Oh, I think so. Just having that time to write as well without life getting in the way, because life always gets in the way of those things, doesn't it?
It really does. And then, you know, there's places you can go, you can win residencies to go and write, but, I mean, you're still leaving behind jobs and stuff that are so demanding.
So can you tell us what's next or what you're going to be writing on this wonderful trip?
Well, I had already, when I won the Ampersand, started something slightly more contemporary for young adults, thinking that, you know, the In the Dark Spaces was never going to take off. So this one's set in Australia, and it's kind of an alien invasion, and there's three kids out camping when it happens. But there's this alien invasion is all powerful, and ahead of them come other aliens who have been driven out of their planets, and they're sort of moving ahead of the fleet, just trying to keep ahead. So
thank you so much for your time, Callie. The book was so incredibly unique and enjoyable, and I really appreciated your time. And I love talking to authors about their work after I've, you know, read it and thought about it, and then we get to think about it again. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me on. It's been fun.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.